Welcome, soccer fans. You're listening to Soccer Radio, the very first radio talk show dedicated on the happenings of youth soccer here in Southern California. I'm your host, Johnny Ventura. Thank you so much for joining us in this evening on April 23rd, 2008. We have a great show for you guys this evening. A wonderful, wonderful show. We have just an incredible person and a very well-known soccer player. Eric Winalda will be with us here on Soccer Radio in the next 6 minutes. So we're going to be checking in with Eric, find out what's going on with him, his endeavors, and things like that. So stick around. This is a great show. You don't want to miss this. As always, if you want to participate on our show, you can email us at soccerradio@gmail.com. We have also created a chat room for everybody to log on. Everybody. That doesn't matter what server you're using, whether it's AOL, you know, anything. You can log on. What you need to do is you need to go straight to our website at bbsradio.com/soccerradio. That's bbsradio.com/soccerradio. Scroll down to the Wednesday program information, and you will see a link there that says Soccer Guest Room. Just go ahead and click on that. That'll take you right to the Soccer Guest Room live. And all you have to do is throughout the show, type in the question you want. I can take a look at the screen here on my monitor, and I will read your questions or comments, whatever you have during the show, and we'll throw them in when it's appropriate, whenever we have time. So anybody can log on to that, okay? So go straight to bbsradio.com/soccerradio and go to our Soccer Guest Room. The only thing we require you to do is just put your first name in, and in parentheses, just put the city where you're listening from. And your question to Eric Winalda. All right? And as always, you can get a hold of us here on the studio lines on Monday through Friday from 10 to 3 p.m. That's area code 818-340-6509. If you have any comments or questions or any information you want to share with us, any soccer story that is coming up or you know about that you want us to check into and throw it on the air, we'll be glad to check on that. Okay? That's 818-340-6509. Today's show is brought to you by Offside Sports. Offside Sports is located at 1955 Ventura Boulevard in the city of Woodland Hills, and it is a team outfitting company. Roland is the owner, great guy over there, specializes in embroidery and silk screening. You can pick up all kinds of jerseys, MLS and Barcelona and Manchester United. It's just team outfitting for everybody, man. Head on over there to Offside Sports, 1955 Ventura Boulevard in the city of Woodland Hills. Let them know that Johnny from Soccer Radio sent you. You'll get a 10% discount on whatever you purchase. Or you can give them a call at 818-708-2330. That's 818-708-2330. All right. Well, let's get to it, man. We're going to be coming to Eric Winalda very shortly. But first, I just want to touch base a little bit. How many of you guys had a chance to take a look at the Galaxy-Houston Dynamo game over the weekend? 2-2 tie. But let me tell you, I don't want to talk about the scoring. What I want to talk about is the horrific, horrific refereeing in that game. It was just unbelievable. It reminded me when I was playing ASO. That's how bad the refereeing was. It was just ridiculous. Beckham complaining about every single call when he's not supposed to be complaining. The referee respects him too much, will not take out the yellow card. Same thing with Donovan. There's one thing about Donovan that I did not like. I mean, he was fouled pretty hard by Caraccio, I believe, fouled him, elbowed him on a fast break, knocked him down. I mean, the ref should have called that. That should have been, you know, that could have been easily a red card, but should have been a yellow card, definitely. Nothing was called. Obviously, Landon was upset about it. And then Landon scored a goal on a corner, a crossover from Beckham. And guess who was on him? Caraccio. And scores on Caraccio. Caraccio's on the ground. Can't believe it. Donovan looks over at him and just mouths off like crazy, going off at him. Unsportsmanlike conduct, nothing. The referee did not even say a word. You know, if I'm not mistaken, in the NBA, when you slam somebody, you're going up somebody and you slam dunk him, and you look at him and you point at him and you antagonize him, that's an automatic technical. That's something. Landon should have got a yellow card in that. So, you know what? The point is that the players will take it as far as they can go. Until the referee steps in and pulls out the cards. Who knows? Maybe the referee forgot his cards that night. You know, who knows? Maybe he loaned it over to his son who was repping over there at another league, so who knows, but horrific. The refereeing in MLS has to clean up, man. It has to clean up. It's just ridiculous. Ridiculous. Anyways, that was a 2-2 tie between Galaxy and Houston Dynamo. And today's match, we're going to take a little detour here, even though we don't talk about, you know, European soccer, but the UEFA Cup. For those of you who either taped it, TiVo'd it, this is the time to turn down your volume, step aside a little bit. Anyways, I'm going to talk a little bit about the Barcelona-Manchester United game. Great game. Barcelona dominated the entire match. The entire match, 68%, 70% to Manchester's 30-0 tie. But it was just the clash of the Titans. It was a very good match. I just don't see Barcelona beating Manchester at Old Trafford. It ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. So, and then Chelsea, with the luck of an own goal by Liverpool, with 20 seconds left to go in the game, ties that score 1-1. So Chelsea ties away, and now head on back home and take on Liverpool for the second round. So I'm predicting it's going to be a Chelsea and Manchester United final. And after that, it's going to be Manchester United again taking the UEFA Cup. So, all right. We got a packed show, like I said, this evening. You're listening to Soccer Radio. Eric Winaldo is going to be with us shortly. You want to participate in the show, you want to ask him some questions, log on to our website at bbsradio.com/soccerradio. Just go ahead and click on the link that says Soccer Guest Room. That'll take you live. I can look at the monitor here. If you have a question, I will ask him whenever we have time. All right? We're going to talk to Eric, find out what's going on with him. He's got some news for us, too. So it's going to be a cool show, man. We're looking forward to having this guy. This guy definitely he's coming on the show and turned up the show a notch. So, I mean, this is the guy. We're talking about somebody who played professionally, represented his country, did a little bit of dabbling here and there with ESPN and ABC, a little color commentary. And that's why I wanted to have him on the show, because, you know, with Eric, he doesn't pull any punches, man. It's either black or white with him. He tells it like it is. So I like this. We're going to have a great show, all right? You're listening to Soccer Radio. We'll be right back after this short break. Eric Winaldo, next. Welcome back, everybody. This is Soccer Radio, a talk show dedicated about the happenings in club soccer here in Southern California. I'm your host, Johnny Ventura. Today's date is April 23rd, 2008, and thank you so much for listening this evening. It is just going to be a great show. We have a special guest. Actually, they're all special guests with us, really. But this guy is just going to turn it up a notch with us here at Soccer Radio, and we're lucky to have him, and we're glad to have him. So, everybody, let's welcome Eric Winaldo to Soccer Radio. How you doing, buddy? Thanks for being with us.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
Hey, well, thank you
for clapping in there.
Well, we thank you for being with us, Eric, man. Hey, what's going on with you a little bit? I mean, basically, I know you're retired and everything. We're just going to kind of like, what's your life happening here? Why don't you tell us a little bit? You were born in Westlake, California, obviously. You're a local boy out here from San Fernando Valley. And after playing AYSO Region 5, where did you move on? What club did you end up playing for after that?
Well, I stayed, you know, local, and I was with CVU, which is Canal Valley United. Mm-hmm. For me, growing up in our area was very different then than it is now. It's a completely, you know, new ball game. There's a lot of clubs. There was only about three or four when I was growing up. But you know, the landscape has grown. You know, not much for the better, but it certainly is much more competitive now.
Mm-hmm. So you play for CVU.
Do you hear me echoing? Did I hear myself? Am I echoing?
I'm hearing a little bit of echo on my end, but it's not going out through the airwaves like that. So that's what happens when you got the internet. You know, it's sometimes it doesn't clean up too well. But so you played for Conejo Valley United, and you played up until how old were you when you left Conejo Valley United?
Well, I mean, Kobe Jones and I, we grew up together, which was a tremendous benefit for both of us to be able to go through the entire process, you know, high school, club soccer. We both started, you know, at the age of about five or six. So for us, it was interesting because when we look back at it now, we've seen every single possible level that you can play on this country or in this world. So it's pretty amazing now to look back and see all the stuff that we were able to accomplish. At the same time, you try and stay, you know, grounded to the important stuff of what the kids are going through today, because just like I said before, it's very different. It's not something that I think anybody should be too proud of. I think we've kind of lost sight of how to develop players, and it's pretty much the reason why I've decided to throw my hat in the ring, so to speak, to get involved with the development of players from this area, because I really, really believe in the potential of the, you know, like you said, the, I guess, anywhere in between Santa Clarita and Santa Barbara. I think there's a tremendous amount of talent in that area, and I'd like to try and figure out how we can help those kids.
Well, certainly they'll listen to you, that's for sure. I mean, you've just got some accolades on your resume here. I mean, listen, at 5, 6 years old, did you ever think that you would accomplish so much in your soccer career?
Well, I mean, I don't think at that age, but I think one thing that I was very lucky with is that I made a decision really young, you know. I mean, if you were to ask me when I was about 8 or 9, what I want to do with my life, I would have told you straight up, I want to be a professional soccer player. And
so you knew that at 8, 9 years old, 8, 9 years old, that you wanted to be a soccer player.
My mom, I think it's, you know, mainly because of the NASL, I was very fortunate to be able to watch, you know, guys like Pelé and Johan Cruyff, and, you know, my personal favorite was George Best.
Mm-hmm.
And which maybe is a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, you have him as a role model, and you start emulating yourself after him, you're going to get in trouble. But the fact that we had soccer at a young age, you know, to go and watch the Aztecs and the Cosmos, the Seattle Sounders, and Earthquakes, it was a time where soccer was really exploding, and we had something to look up to. But I'll go back to it again. I think if you take the age of the era when I grew up in, it was all about personality. It was all about, you know, expression. And when you watch kids today and you try and figure out, you know, what makes them tick, it's really difficult. They've oftentimes been overcoached and turned into robots, and it's really discouraging because, you know, from my career, I retired 7 years ago. Like you said, I dabbled with ESPN. Did a lot of commentary, and that didn't
good commentary. Let me tell you,
enough.
Good commentary, may I add. I mean, you didn't. You told it like it is. You told it like it is, Eric. That was, you know.
Well, that'll get you fired, which is essentially what happened.
Uh-huh.
I think if it's that's just basically because I think a lot of people are a little bit thin-skinned. They don't want to really hear the truth. You know, I was listening to you talk about Landon. I think that whole second half and everything that happened, I mean, Tate Ione started that mess. And, it was good to see Landon grow up a little bit. You know, of course the referee, you know, his inclusion or disclusion from all those happenings was actually, I think, a good thing. I like those outbursts, and I like to see that Landon is real, and he does get frustrated, and he's trying to be a man out there, and that was encouraging to me. I like that. I mean, you talk about referees, and the refereeing, we can talk until we're blue in the face, but the referees, they're never going to improve. There's two kinds of referees. There's bad ones and worse ones, and you just got to get used to it. And that doesn't mean that they're all, you know, not good at what they do. It's the hardest job on the planet, at the youth level, at the college level, at the professional level, it doesn't matter. It's you're never going to make anybody happy when you're the referee, but you got to approach it as a part of the game. But listening to you talk about Landon, I'm glad that happened. I'm glad that that people got to see him get frustrated and taunt somebody, even if he doesn't get a yellow card. I don't think that's a good message to send down the kid. I think you're obviously going to tell your kids, you know, you don't want to do that. But I think as professionals, and we've seen Landon be criticized numerous occasions, I like to see that outburst. I don't think he'll do it again. I think he'll apologize for it because he is human and he made a mistake. But it showed us another side of him, which was good. I like that.
Yeah, like you were saying, I mean, he is a role model. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, when you're in the heat of the moment, you are playing. You will sometimes lose it, but sometimes players need to realize that, hey, you know, they're under the microscope. That particular situation, you might have a kid the next day might mimic that during his game.
I would rather have something like that happen than have to have a situation where, you know, you've got Allen Iverson having to cover both of his arms because of the nature of the tattoos, that you just can't see because it's too offensive. You know, I think there's good things and bad things about, you know, I think we get a little bit too critical at times. I mean, you know, you got NFL players that are getting themselves in trouble and they litter our back pages and our front page news with some of their antics. And you got baseball players taking steroids and basketball players getting in trouble as well. We're the milk and cookies of sports, but we shouldn't always frown on some of the things that we do because it's part of the game and it's part of I think a maturation process with our whole society understanding or our whole culture understanding the sport a little bit better. But I mean I'm not trying to encourage kids to go out there and taunt each other, but in Landon's case, it was actually nice to see. I actually was I was proud of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, you know, sometimes it can be taken a little too far, and I was a little worried about that he was going to have some kids out there who look up to him and mimic him a little bit. Speaking about the game, it is a great game. I mean, it's definitely not a water polo game, though, right? I mean, it's it's a great game.
Well, I think that's the thing about this sport is it is, it was dubbed the beautiful game for a reason. There's so many pieces to it and components to it that, I think they serve as great life lessons for our kids and for anybody who plays the sport. You can learn a lot about yourself.
Right.
And being a team and you can do that in any sport, but in soccer more so than anything else. Again, I would go back to personality and expression. I think kids really have the opportunity to find themselves through the sport, and to because as parents we tell them no, and we tell them no 1,000 times a week. But when they get out there with a soccer ball, it's our time to shut up and let them play the game the way they want to play it, and to teach us who they are, but not try and turn them into something that we want them to be.
Right.
We have to understand that the sport itself is the greatest teacher.
Yeah. Were you ever pressured as a kid playing? I mean, were your parent, your dad or your mom always wanted you to be the best, or did that come just from within you?
Well, I mean, I grew up in a family that had very limited understanding of the sport itself. It was just something that I wanted to do as a kid. My father was a football player at Princeton. Which, you know, is essentially where you recruit for the CIA. I mean, it's like a 240-pound, 6'4" guy, linebacker who gets good grades. But his understanding of the sport was very limited. But the way that he approached my progress as a player was really great. I mean, I encourage parents to always allow your kids to get information from as many sources as you can, you know, and allow them to decipher what's good and what's bad and what they will take with them. The sooner that we start understanding that, you know, the better our players will be. If we start telling them, you know, you have to do this and you have to do this, which is something my parents never did, our kids will pretty much go the other direction. So I was never pressured, I would say. I think the obviously that's a cliche, but you know, I put the most pressure on myself. The only thing that my dad did say to me that drove me nuts was like, there's always going to be somebody, and you know, that drove me nuts. So I was always trying to get better.
Hey, we got a question here from our chat room. Kyle is listening to us. Thanks a lot for listening, Kyle. Kyle's question to you, Eric, is he wants to know if any of your parents played soccer.
Nope, neither one of them played the sport. My father tried in his late 30s. He was introduced to the game. He just was trying to be a good dad, I guess. Wasn't very good. wasn't good at all, actually, but, you know, he tried, but neither one of them played. No, I just, something that I picked up at a young age. I remember the day I was introduced to the sport. I went to McDonald's off of Canaan, and a bunch of kids walked in, and they were wearing these uniforms, and my dad said to me, "That's the sport I want you to play. It's called soccer." I remember being terrified. I thought it meant, like, soccer, or, like, you know, boxing or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he took me to my first game, and I watched my first game when I was about five, and it's kind of, I remember this, but I fell in love with the sport when one kid got the ball. I mean, the ball was just bouncing around, and nobody was really doing anything. It was a bunch of, you know, packs chasing around. And then one kid got the ball, and he could dribble. And he had some moves, and he dribbled the entire team. And that was the moment I think I wanted to be a soccer player, because I wanted to be that kid. I wanted to be able to do what he just did. And obviously that kid or that person changed throughout the years, because you know, you always find people that you appreciate that play the sport,
right,
try and emulate yourself after. But that was the day I fell in love with the game. So my parents weren't really the vehicle there. It was just my dad just introduced me to the sport blindly, and I fell in love with it.
That's great. So were your parents, did they play any sport at all? Were they ever athletic or no?
Well, yeah, my dad was a football player. He was a 4-year letterman in high school and track, baseball and football. So he was definitely an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Princeton on a academic scholarship, so he was definitely a student. I gave up trying to be my dad a long time ago. But
hey, not too shabby on your part, man. You were a 3-time All-State high school player.
Well, I mean, you know, I was locked in on one sport. I did play baseball up until my junior year, and when Matt Franco, who ended up playing for the Mets and the Braves, was a lock at third base because he was batting .480 or something, I kind of lost interest. But you know, I played other sports. I ran track like my father, and I just gravitated to soccer because it just was something that I loved doing.
That's great. Landon, if I'm not mistaken, just broke one of your records, correct? From the most caps on the Nats team, is that correct?
No, most goals. He scored
most goals. Most goals.
Yeah, it was. You know, and there's some people listening right now who are thinking the same thing. Yes, I will say it. He just got lucky because he's taken more penalty kicks than me. That's the truth. I wasn't allowed to take a penalty kick until I was 26, but, you know, I think he's taken 7 or 8 of them. And I only got 4, so that's my gripe. That's my complaint. But, no, I understand how important that record is. I held it for a good span of 10 years.
Wow.
And I think it's great. I think it's fantastic that he was able to it's a big deal to score 35 goals for your national team, and he should be very proud of that.
Oh, yeah, definitely proud of that. But you got a record that is never going to be touched. You are the first player to ever score the first goal in the inaugural MLS game in 1996.
Yeah, you know, they can't take that away. But I'll tell you what, though. I mean, there's a kid named Victor Mea, a kid from Chile. You know, that kid should have had 2 goals in the first half. I was so mad at him at halftime, I wanted to kill him. But I guess the way that it turned out, I should be happy that he missed and things went the way they did. It was really a storybook ending, you know, 88th minute and score a goal to win the game on national television and the introduction to everybody to the league. So it's a moment that I'll remember forever.
And a home goal. You guys were playing at home. It was against DC United.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, San Jose is still a fantastic place to play. Great fans, fantastic people. It's unfortunate that our team was so horrible for the first 3 years, but I think once they got Frank Yallop and Landon, they were able to turn that ship around. So.
Yeah. Everybody was complaining about the field, though. The field in San Jose is just too small.
Yeah, the Spartan Stadium, they did the best they could. They, you know, when the league started, you got to understand that there were several fields that were way too small. Columbus had to play at Ohio State's Buckeye Stadium, and that thing was only 61 yards wide, which is way too small. And San Jose was 64. There isn't a stadium in the league that isn't at least 72. So that's, you know, that's, the game has gotten better because the environment and the stadiums have been conducive to better soccer.
Speaking about the game, Eric, I mean, obviously this sport is played worldwide, and in a lot of countries it is their pastime sport. What is it going to take for this sport to take over and pass basketball and baseball here in the United States?
Well, you know, I'm not entirely sure that would be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think if you look at it from different angles, the way that we present the sport, and I just live this from a presentation standpoint with ESPN, we're so busy as a sport trying to find new fans that we end up alienating the fans that we have. And I've always been discouraged by that. I voiced my opinion to ESPN, and obviously I no longer work for them. But it's something that I think the sport itself needs to get better. The product needs to get better. And if the product continues to get better, meaning the players.
The players.
And if the players can continue to not just grow in numbers, but going back to what I'm really passionate about right now is trying to find those kids who, you know, it's a big difference between recognizing talent and recruiting. I mean, let me say that again. Recognizing talent is one thing, and recruiting kids is what club soccer is really all about. And that's the unfortunate truth of it. But what happens is when a talented player is located at a young age, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, well, oftentimes they're overcoached and they're trained into being little robots and to fitting into a system, and they don't find their personality. Then you flash forward 15 years later, and these kids find themselves, you know, at the Home Depot Center as a professional soccer player, and it's their turn to play, and, you know, instead of acting instinctually, they end up, you know, doing what they've trained to do, and that's pass the ball, or to not overthink this and to do the simple thing. If you were to watch, you know, Lionel Messi, the way he played today for Barcelona against Manchester United, pure instinct, there was something beautiful about every time he touched the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it didn't work out or not, it was still a player with just putting the other team completely on their heels because they didn't know what he was going to do. Cristiano Ronaldo was the same thing. When he gets the ball, he's willing to try things. He's not being discouraged at any time.
Right.
To be talented, to be able to play and do things the way he wants to do things. And it's fun to watch players like that. It's why we stay inspired. But we don't do a good job of creating players. We have them, believe me. They live in the United States. They're here. There's some kid who's 8 years old that could potentially be better than Cristiano Ronaldo. For sure, 100%. He lives with borders of the United States right now. But within 4 or 5 years, one of our coaches will grasp and ruin him, and it'll be over before it started.
And you say
that's the unfortunate truth.
You say ruin him. Is it because in club soccer, at a young age, some of these coaches are just putting way too much pressure on these kids? Some of these coaches are more interested in winning hardware than actually developing future good soccer players? Do you think that's the problem here?
Well, I mean, in club soccer, it's all about winning. I think that's
which is a shame, by the way.
It's
a shame. It should be all about winning. It's not good. No.
Well, I mean, this is the way I look at it. When I grew up, you know, Kobe and I were very different players, but we went through the system, if you will. We constantly were being told that we don't need to be on our club. We need to be this other club, this super club, this, you know, it's an all-star team of all of the high schools in the area. I mean, you're stupid if you don't play for them. The reality is that if you play, if you're very talented and you play with limited players, who might be your friends, but if you start being able to think at a level, meaning if you get the ball and the guy next to you, the kid next to you, you're able to, in a split second, remind yourself that that kid has no left foot, mm-hmm. and you better pass it to his right foot, you will become a better soccer player. If you surround yourself with players who are just as talented or more talented than you at a young age, you get lazy. Mm-hmm. What happens is when you get the ball, you don't think about technique. You don't think about the right pass. You just kick it at the other kid's foot because he's good. He'll figure it out.
Right.
And that's not the way the game's played. And it's something that Kobe and I laugh about all the time is that, you know, we played with some pretty good players, but we all had our limitations. And you know, when you know the limitations and you're able to take your game to a whole new level simply because you are forced to think on a level, and just it's a learning process. Players progress at their own rate, but
right.
it's the ones that you can recognize at a young age who are starting to figure out things like that. We have situations where the kid won't pass the ball sometimes, and you have parents from the sideline screaming pass, and everything in our, you know, in our philosophies as the U.S., you know, U.S. soccer put out this thing that said until the age of 14 is all about the player starting to develop the relationship with the ball.
Right.
So it's funny how counterproductive limited minds can make things. So it's an endeavor. It really is. I'm looking forward to trying to make a difference. I mean, it's the first time I've had time in the
We'll definitely talk about that very shortly. We're going to take a short break here, Eric, and then we have a friend of yours that's going to be coming on the air with us, Joe Brzezinski. Will be coming.
Hey, you did well pronouncing that.
Excuse me?
You did well pronouncing that. Good job. Well, That's a tough name.
This is what happens when you got 5 hours to spare every day. I've been practicing this, so Joe made sure that I did this correctly. Otherwise, I would have to give him $20 for every letter I mispronounce. So
no,
I'm down for that. So we're gonna be right back after the short break with our guest Eric Winalda and our second guest on Joe Brzezinski. You're listening to Soccer Radio. Stay tuned, everybody. Hey, soccer fans, the WPSL comes to San Fernando Valley. Come out May 24th and support the Los Angeles Rampage women's soccer team as they take on Ajax America at Nansen Field. Tickets are free. That's May 24th at 12 o'clock, Nansen Field. Come and support the first women's premier soccer league team for the San Fernando Valley. Los Angeles Rampage home opener is May 30th at Granada Hills High School, 8 p.m. versus Claremont Stars. For free tickets, call 818-887-9019. That's 818-887-9019 or log on to rampagefc.com. Welcome back. This is Soccer Radio, a talk show dedicated about the happenings in club soccer here in Southern California. We were talking to Eric Winalda, and we have another guest with us, Joe Brzezinski. Joe, are you there? Can you hear us?
I'm here. I can hear you fine.
Great. Thanks for being with us on Soccer Radio, Joe. Thank you very much. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? Obviously, you played professionally in Chicago. You're from the Chicago area, and you moved out here to open something up over here with Eric. Tell us a little bit about what's going on your end.
I did play professionally, not so much in Chicago. My big experience was the indoor game. I played in the AISL for 2 years with the Cincinnati Excite. We won national championship in 2005, and I kind of hung it up after that. I had some trouble with my hip flexor. But I've always had a thing for... I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
Okay. I've always had a thing for coaching. I've been coaching... Actually, this year will be 10 years I've been coaching. I've been coaching since I was 15. And part of that experience got me in the locker room with the Chicago Fire when I was 18, and that's where I met Eric. I was more or less the towel boy.
And you moved all the way out here to you moved all the way out here to be the towel book?
We gave him a little bit of a promotion from Cowboy. He's being modest, but he's been running the programs for not just pretty much the community area, the Chicago Fire Juniors and whatnot. Joe's a good man, and we did move him all the way out to California. He's going to be much happier out here. The weather is better, and his wife will stop complaining about the snow. So Joe's basically going to be a big part of my academy, which I'll be announcing. I guess we're announcing this right now, huh?
There we are. Announce it. Announce it. This is your time, buddy. You're opening up a soccer academy. What's the name of it?
Well, it's going to be called Winalda Soccer Academy. We've tossed this idea around about 5 years ago, and I was able to put a collection of players together, 14, 15, 16-year-old kids, and we just did it as an experiment, really. It was called Monday Nights in May, and it's a fully funded program where we just wanted to see what we could do and see if we could find some talented players who couldn't necessarily afford to play soccer at the club level, and we had a great experience, and I've been talking about it for a long time. I've been retired for a while, but I met Joe a good 8 years ago, and I kept track of him, and he and another friend of ours, Joe Carver, I basically coerced these two guys to you know, uproot their families and move out to Southern California, which isn't a bad deal, but they're very good at what they do. We're going to run some camps, and we're going to introduce, I guess, the Winalda Soccer Academy brand to the local people.
And I'm going to put Joe and Joe in charge of it.
I can't lose. I got two Joes.
The Soccer Academy is being run, obviously, by Eric Winalda, and Joe Prusinski is going to be the assistant director coaching of the soccer camp.
Well, I mean, the way this kind of unfolded is that, you know, in the past, the reason why I wanted to start an academy is because I did not like the club structure. I could not understand why I would get involved with club. I've dabbled a little bit with coaching the CVU and the CME Eclipse, and there's just too much turmoil. There's too many people who have too many agendas, and it forced me to kind of want to do my own thing. I mean, it's funny. I sat with Steve Sampson today. At Galetto's in Westlake, to give them a plug, and that's where we watch games. So we watch the game together, and we talk about his academy and my academy and what we're trying to accomplish. And it's funny that both of us have the same, I guess, ideology about this, that we just want to do our own thing simply because we've never been able to get along with anybody until very recently, where I've had some conversations with Tim Kelly from Real California, and my academy will essentially be in a direct alliance with Real California, which is pretty much based in Camarillo. But I guess that the relationship that we're developing right now will hopefully be able to progress over the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. We are currently looking at places to build. We do have most of the financing in place, and we're going to build something great for the kids. And I'm really happy for Real California because, you know, it should be that way. It should be a club, should be a place. It shouldn't be a thing.
Right.
And hopefully the academy will be able to provide that kind of atmosphere and that kind of environment for the club.
Joe, and what exactly is your role with the Winalda Soccer Academy?
Kind of like Eric said, I help them do all the day-to-day stuff, getting it all coordinated. I also sit with Real California, their assistant director of coaching, so I kind of mediated between there. Eric's our technical advisor, so we get a lot of good advice from him. But as far as the academy goes, right now it's just a lot of groundwork, getting the location set, putting together a great staff, and with the support of Real, we've been able to do that. We have a great staff on board to move forward with all of our camps. You mentioned Joe Carver. Joe Carver is coming all the way out from Chicago just like I did, and he's the best I've ever seen with ages 3 to 7. So we're lucky to have him and the other coaches we're bringing on board. And it's a fun project that we're working on, and it's a lot of work. And that's pretty much, I just every day make phone calls, let people know what's happening, talk to different park districts, trying to get the location set, talking to different clubs, letting them know what's happened. I sat with the president of Real today and told him what we're going to do to support the club from our end and things of that nature as well. So it's a good project.
And I understand David Bondrill, what's his role in this academy?
Well, David and Eric and I have all known each other. David and Eric have known each other forever. I've known him since he was with the Fire in 2000. Mm-hmm. And David is actually currently the full-time general manager at AC Milan out in Santa Clarita. But because of his relationship with Eric and me, myself, we've been able to bring him on to do some of the academy work. And he's actually taken a role with Real as well, helping us train teams just through our relationship with us. We've been able to bring him in and a few other key staff members to the club level that will transcend into the academy to give us the right staff to help these kids get where they need to be.
What it comes to Vaught, is as soon as we can afford him, we're going to hire him, and we're going to steal him from Santa Clarita. That's basically what we're saying.
Hey, I'm sure that won't be a problem, but any of you two going to coach club soccer, or are you just basically going to dedicate your time to the soccer academy?
Well, I'm currently coaching at Real. Like I said, I'm the assistant director of coaching there, and I have under 17 girls, a bronze level team, great group of kids. Looks like now, from their response, they're actually going to be two teams because of all the groundwork they've done. And then I fill in, obviously, whatever needed for Real as well, covering coaches that are out of town. We have a great coach right now named Christelle, played in the French youth divisions and stuff coming up for the national side over there, went back home. We've covered for her. So I'm still coaching every day, all day.
And, Eric, you think you're going to step on the pitch and coach some club soccer or no?
Well, I did that with I had a group of 16-year-olds that I was able to coach for a couple of years with CBU. And then the problem was for me is that my travel schedule with ESPN prohibited me from being, when we used to do the Saturday games, I could train them, but I couldn't be there for their games, you know? And
yeah, that's important. That's really important to be there.
But they did great, you know, and then what was really kind of enlightening to me is that the next year when we did the Thursday night, I was only able to train them once a week and be there for the games, and they didn't do as well. And the reality was is I wasn't able to train them through the week to prepare them for games, and it made things difficult. But you know, since my slate has kind of been wiped clean, I'm definitely looking at two things. I want to have a flagship team, which will be in a direct association with Real California, and that'll probably be that age. It'll probably be that graduation age. You know, kids who are juniors now are going to be seniors next year. And that's kind of part of what my academy is going to stand for. But you know, the biggest thing that I'm going to change about, I think the biggest thing I'm going to change about club soccer is the business model is going to be very different than the way it is now. And people in California spend a lot of money getting their kids through club soccer. The goal for my academy through Real California is to get those kids who are 16, the second that they turn 16 years old, my academy will essentially pay the rest of the way.
Oh, that's
so what that means is that I'm going to figure out a way to make that those last 2 years of club soccer the least expensive, not the most expensive,
uh-huh.
And to be able to use my network of people to get kids placed in college and to be able to go where they want to go without having to go so deep into their parents' bank accounts that if people go broke just trying to get to college. We can accomplish that in a different way, and I think that's the academy's main drive is to help kids go through a program, through a tenureship. So if you join the club, if you join Real California at the age of 9 or 10, and you pay your dues for till you're 16, it's our job to pay for it the rest of the way. That's what a club does. And then you celebrate the exit or the moving on of each player. And it's not something that should be looked at as such an expense. You know, it should be an experience that the money side of it should be taken care of for you. And I plan to do that. That's That's the overall goal of the academy. Is to,
that's a great goal. That's a great goal.
To help
Joe,
kids,
is,
to help
Joe, is there a website that you can inform our listeners about the academy and about Real or a phone number that...
It's not up yet, Joe. Joe, it's not up yet, but it will be when all the TV, believe it or not, .com, for the interim, and then we'll... I think we'll move from there, but Joe and I got to talk about that. That's Monday's meeting. We're talking about websites.
Okay, good, yeah.
Well, Joe, unless Joe, you want to go into the Real California deal.
I will.
Well, what you guys can do, once you hit that meeting on Monday, you guys can shoot us an email the next day, let us know if there's the, you know, what the website domain is going to be and all that stuff. We'll be glad to throw that on our next show. No problem, man. Just go ahead and shoot that over to us on an email.
And then for
you can check out Real California, and we'll be making announcements as we go. And this is like a pre-launch, if you will. We want to make it known that what we're doing and what we're up to. And we're very proud of the relationship that we've developed with Real California, Tim Kelly, and the board of directors. We've got some great coaching already in place. You know, Joey Kirk, who is a great trainer. And a friend, and, you know, I'm looking forward to working with him and meeting most of the staff so we can, you know, just basically turn this into something that makes sense. Maybe for the first time.
Yeah, it's all for the kids. That's the main thing, man. It's all for the kids. We got a few minutes here, and we're going to try something new here for the first time, Eric. We like to, we have a segment here that's called Take Five on the Pitch, and what we'd like to do is ask you five questions. You must be honest and let us know exactly how your feelings are. So go ahead and step on the pitch for us. We got five questions for you, Eric. What team do you repent not playing for?
Oh, Borussia Dortmund.
Really?
I had the opportunity. What do you mean? The team that I wish I would have played for?
What team that you wanted to play for that you didn't get a chance to play for?
Well, I actually had a pre-contract with Borussia Dortmund in Germany. What happened was I went to the United States. I came back to the United States, and we played in the U.S. Cup. And Karl-Heinz Riedel scored three goals against us in Chicago. And they were sitting on all this money that they just got from their success in the UEFA Cup. And it was in those days there was restrictions on foreign talent, and essentially it was made more sense for them to hire a German. So I lost out big time, and I had to go to Bochum.
Question number two: do you think Bruce Arena was the right coach to lead the Nats in 2006?
No, I in retrospect, in hindsight being 2020, I think you could say it's easy to say no. Going into that tournament, I think he was. I think there's a couple of things that happened that you know, prohibited the team from having success. And he and I have discussed that. That will stay private, but the truth is that he could have done a better job. He's a very good coach. He's a very good manager. But he just made some serious mistakes in that deal.
Question number three: do you think the $250 million salary for Beckham is worth it?
Well, let me explain that, because a lot of people are confused by that. David Beckham was paid a great deal of money, but there's an out clause, meaning when this thing is over in 4 years or 5 years, he's essentially going to buy the Galaxy back and possibly the stadium. So David Beckham is here. He's making this league money every single second. They're selling jerseys. They're filling stadiums, the concession stands, tickets. All that is going to make sense. This is a business deal. That's all this is. It doesn't. Do not look at him as he talented enough? Is he good enough? No, that's not what this is about. This is about raising awareness and doing a business deal that makes sense for Philip Benchitz and AEG and David Beckham. And in that regard, it's a win-win situation.
And Galaxy has the number one selling jersey in the world. Who would have thought that, huh? Question number four. Which is your most memorable goal as a professional player?
Oh, wow. It's the inaugural game. I think there was a lot of pressure on on us as players and as a brand new league. I think that just the exhilaration that everybody had and the relief that first game didn't end 0-0 was enough to make it special. But I still remember it. I remember everything about it. There's a long story that goes into that, and I'll tell you over a couple beers, but we don't have time for it now. But the probably was that that was my most memorable goal, and it probably always will be. Everybody thinks it's going to be the World Cup goal, but doing something.
That's what I thought it was. I thought it was the World Cup goal as well.
No, that was the only time I've ever actually hit the spot exactly where I was aiming. It was really odd. Usually my secret has been to aim for the keeper and miss. That's the secret to my success. But the MLS goal, I still go back to. I cherish it. I have a love affair with San Jose, and it was a great moment.
All right, our last question. Is Eric Winalda ever going to step up and own an MLS soccer team?
Well, financially, you got to be able to figure that out first. But if that ever happens, you bet. I am going to get into coaching. I've had some long conversations this last couple of weeks with Bob Bradley, the national team coach, who was my last coach as a professional. And Joe and I have spoken on many occasions about that. I'm going to get into coaching, both at the youth level and then. You know, if I've already said no three times, but if eventually I will probably when I'm ready. And I think when my kids are a little bit older, when my kids are older, and meaning what I mean by that is when my kids are older and they start to not like me, you know, when they get 14, 15, 16, and they hate their parents, maybe that'll be the time for me to become a coach, which is a ways down the road. But right now they like me and I like hanging out with them, so I'm going to spend some time with my kids and get involved at the youth level. But, I still got a long time to live and a lot of stuff to look into, but if it ever pans out that I could buy a franchise and I've got $50 million in the bank, yeah, I'll definitely do it.
Well, I know where your place you can pick up $50 million. Just call David. David Beckham will be glad to help you out there.
Yeah, maybe. Well, maybe I could.
Well, that is our five questions for Take Five on the Pitch. Eric Winalda, step off the pitch. Thank you very much for answering those questions. Guys, it's about that time to say goodnight and say goodbye. Eric Winalda was our guest tonight, along with Joe Brevchinski, and they just made an announcement that they are going to open up the Winalda Soccer Academy out in Camarillo, which is on the table with Real California. So some good news for soccer fans and some good news for soccer players out there. Eric and Joe, thank you so much for being with us on Soccer Radio. We wish you guys good luck and a great triumph in that soccer club. Anything you want to say to our listeners before we sign off?
No, but just be watching for us. We're going to have a lot of camps this summer. We'll be looking forward to meeting a lot of new kids and a lot of new faces, and we love it. And I'm going to pass it over to Joe because he's my right arm, and he's going to do all of this. So he's going to be a very busy guy over the next 4 to 6 months.
Joe, you're anything you want to say to the listeners before we sign off?
Thank you guys for the opportunity. People out there, if you want to know about our affiliation with Real, it's realcalfc.org. Eric and I have spent some time putting together the academy, and Tim Kelly gave us a great chance for Real to be involved at the club level. There's some great coaches there as well. We got Lalo from the Mexican national team, coaches two teams for us, Christy Coleman, a great player at UCLA. It's a great spectrum across the board, moving towards our academy and the club level, things that we'd like to see change, and we're just looking forward to it. We'll be
good.
All over your communities all summer.
Good. Well, I wish you guys good luck, man. Thank you for being with us. I know both your schedules are very busy, and thank you for supporting Soccer Radio. You know, this is the first soccer talk show out here in Southern California for club soccer, so we thank you for supporting us and being with us on the show. Guys, thank you so much for listening to Soccer Radio. Always tune here every Wednesday from 7:55 close to 9 o'clock weekly. We'll bring to you top-notch information, special guests and all kinds of stuff, and hitting the club soccer scene along with high school soccer and MLS and everything. So this is Johnny Ventura. Thank you so much for listening. Everybody, this is Soccer Radio signing off. Good night. Thank you.